Ah, space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Larry Mueller Show today. And we're voyaging with a look at a new comet that we're going to be able to see coming up next month, I think, and some other things with astronomy expert Paul Kinzer, who will talk about the comet and on a whole lot more. He's the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. He's a member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club. And so we'll talk about the stars and the comets. We'll also talk about holiday astronomy gifts, other reasons to keep an eye on the sky. So what do you love about stargazing? What questions do you have for Paul? Give a call at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Paul Kinzer, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Yeah, it's great to hear your voice, Larry.
Yeah, great to hear your voice. You've been on the show for many years now, and we get advice for new stargazers on the show, and we'll do that later on the show. But how did you get interested in astronomy?
Oh, well, I've liked it all my life. You know, I was born in 1960, right around the time NASA got started. I was 9 years old when Neil Armstrong stepped on the moon, so I was steeped in it. My brother had a telescope when we were younger, and when I was very young, I know I saw Saturn, but I don't really remember it. And then life got in the way. I grew up. I went to school. I got a job. But then in 1996, I ran a program for urban kids called Minneapolis Kids Explorers, and we would go out into various areas, forests, things like that, and study nature. And these trips would culminate in an overnight at a state park. And one night I used our spotting scope, which we had for looking at birds, to show the kids the moon. And they were really excited by that. And I was sort of, but then later after they went to bed, I just aimed the telescope at a random star, and it turned out to be the planet Saturn.
Hmm.
And I just was overwhelmed because there it was, not large, but bright, and you could see the rings. And I thought, oh, my gosh. And that, I was just bitten. And my passion has grown ever since. And, and now with the Internet, you know, it was coming up right around that same time. There's so much you can find. Things you don't have to go out to see, but things that also enhance what you can go out to see.
Yeah, so... Yeah. So what's out there right now? You know, I get out in the morning, so I'm one of these morning guys that's up at 5:30 or so. It's still dark, and I love it when there are no clouds or few clouds in the sky.
Sure. And right now, you're lucky for being a morning person because the comet you mentioned, Comet Leonard, it was discovered last January by Greg Leonard, a research specialist at Mount Lemmon Observatory in Arizona. But it's getting brighter in the sky now. There's some beautiful photos people have taken of it. You can't see it with your naked eye yet, but they're hoping in the next few weeks you will be able to, and it's up in the early morning right now. And it may get as bright as magnitude 4, which is how they measured the brightness of things in the sky. And typically, if something is magnitude, about 5, if you have a dark sky, something spread out like a comet, you can see it with your naked eye. So magnitude 4 means, yeah, you probably will. The problem with comets is people make predictions, and those predictions often go wrong. It may not get that bright, but it might get much brighter and be easily seen. And until about mid-December, you'll be able to see it in the early morning sky. But the thing about comets is they're brightest when they're closest to the sun. So they're either following the sun in the evening, so the sun goes down and then you can see the comet and then it sets. Or in the morning, you'll see the comet first, and then as the sky gets brighter with the sun, it will disappear as the sun rises. So in the first 2 weeks of December, you'll see it in the morning, but then By December 12th, it will become an evening comet, so you'll need to go out in the evening. The thing is, in the evening, it's going to be pretty low in the southwestern sky. Still, I'm hoping that it'll be bright enough to see with the naked eye. Comets are pretty cool things. They only come around every once in a while. They're not predictable, and they can be amazing.
I'm trying to think back, and it's got to be somewhere around 20 years ago. Was it Hale-Bopp?
Yeah, it's actually 25 now, 1996. And that's the thing, I think, folks who are old enough to remember seeing that. That's what we think of when we think of a comet. And that was a once-in-a-century or maybe more comet. It was so bright, and it was visible to the naked eye under dark skies for months, because it was so big and so bright. At the time, I lived in Minneapolis, and right in the light-polluted skies of Minneapolis, you could see it easily with your naked eye.
Yeah, it was. At the time, we lived on Lake Monona in Madison and had quite a large window looking out on the lake. And I can remember getting up early one morning and just sitting there watching that comet. It was just such an amazing, amazing experience.
Right. And it's one of those things where if you know a little bit about what's going on, to me, it makes them even more amazing. That thing was... most of what you saw was stuff being melted off, basically, sublimated off the surface of it by the sun and spreading out into a ball of visibility thousands and thousands of miles across, but still millions of miles away. And even though it was whipping around the sun faster than any of the planets at that point, it looked like it was just sitting still in the sky, still and silent and huge in the sky. Just amazing.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that we can see right now in the night sky. We got Jupiter and Saturn and Venus, I think, are all visible right now.
As soon as it gets dark, and the lovely thing about this is even in city lights, you should be able to see at least two of them. The lowest, closest to the horizon, and the brightest of the three is Venus. And Venus is closer to the sun than us, so when it gets as close to us as it's going to get, it's right next to the sun, so we can't see it. But before and after that, it's still pretty close to us, and it's in a crescent phase. So if you looked at it with a small telescope, some people, even with a pair of binoculars, can make out the crescent phase. You would see like a little crescent moon. You'd see a bright crescent Venus. And right now, it's fairly low, and it's getting lower every night. And then up and to the left of it is Saturn. Saturn is pretty dim unless you're under pretty dark skies, but you can still see it with your naked eye. And then above it, and brighter than it, but dimmer than Venus, is the planet Jupiter. And the neat thing about all three of them is with a small telescope, you can see more. With Jupiter, you can see four of its moons, even through a pair of binoculars. With Venus, you can see its crescent phase, like I said. And then with Saturn, you can't see this with binoculars, but with a small telescope, you can see its rings. And the other nice thing is these are three of the five planets that are visible with the naked eye, and they're the easiest to see because they get quite far away from the sun. Mercury, you can see it with your naked eye, but not very often because it's so close to the sun. And Mars, another naked eye planet, every 2 years it gets very bright when it gets close to us. But otherwise, if it's on the other side of the sun, it's so small that you really need to know what you're looking for to find it.
Hmm. Steve in Fitchburg, what's on your mind?
Hi. Good morning, Mr. Kenzer. Good afternoon. I am excited to hear your show. I just got a quick call from Betsy in Dodgeville and asked me to tune in, so I'm glad I got a chance to do that. I live in a suburb of Madison, Fitchburg, and I have been able to look at Venus and Jupiter and Saturn. But just wondering what we can do to help our developers do better on light pollution.
Hmm.
Oh, what a great question. I would say the best thing to do is to look for information by searching online for the International Dark Skies Association. They work, that's their entire reason for being is to work on light pollution. Light pollution is it's such a solvable problem. It's not like, you know, we need to drive our cars, and right now gas for most of us is what we need to use because we can't afford more. Light pollution, it's just a matter of making choices. It's cheaper. It's less expensive to not pollute our nighttime skies. Having lights that don't shine upwards and also that don't shine straight outwards, there are very simple ways to deal with that. Now that LED lights are taking over, they are so versatile in what we can do, in what colors they are, that affects our night, what we can see at night. And sadly, a lot of the lights that are going in are too blue. They have too much blue in them, and that really wrecks our night vision and blinds us to what's up in the night sky, and frankly makes it harder to see things at night. So some cities have worked on that. They've realized these are not the right lights, and sadly, we have this idea that the brighter it is at night, the better off we are, the less crime there might be, and research shows that's not true.
Not true at all. And you know, let's talk some more about that after our news break. Paul Kinzer, our guest, author of Stargazing Basics: Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. He'll be with us right up until 12:30. We'll take a quick look at the news, and then we'll be back with Paul, and you can join in too. Give a call, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at the stars on the show today and the night sky with our guest, Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics: Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. He's a member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club as well, and he talks about the latest news in astronomy and what we should be looking for. Questions for him? Well, wanted to get into holiday gift giving as well. And I hope you'll join in if you have a question about what would make a good gift for the holiday season as it relates to the stars. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And, Paul, I mentioned gifts, and Dean from Harper's Ferry called, couldn't stay with us, has a good pair of binoculars, but doesn't have a telescope. And wondering, what are your recommendations for a relatively inexpensive telescope for a beginner?
I am, for the last couple of years, the one that I've been recommending is from an organization called Astronomy Without Borders, or AWB, and they have worked with a company called Celestron, and they've come up with a telescope called the One Sky, and it's only available in the U.S., so anyone listening elsewhere, its price has gone up, I think partially because of supply lines and all that, but maybe because of popularity. It was, for years, $199, and it's gone up to $249. But I still think, of all the telescopes I'm aware of that are available for a beginner, it is the best within its price range. It's easy to use. It's portable. It doesn't require electricity. You know, many of them now have computer mounts or other things on them, which are nice, but they add to the cost and the complexity. So if you look for the AWB One Sky, you'll find it takes you right to that website. And Astronomy Without Borders, they are an international organization that tries their best to get telescopes to groups all around the world who might not otherwise be able to afford them. So some of the money goes to helping that organization.
Nick in Green Bay has a question for you. Nick, hello.
Hey, I've got a few questions for you, but I went to the Goodwill Outlet store, and I found a telescope for $9.99,
mm-hmm.
And I looked online, it's a $400 telescope. It's got the little controller where you can, like, have it automatically find the stars and stuff.
Sure.
And my daughter and I went out, and she is just so amazed by the craters on the moon, so was I. But My question for you is, everybody's like, yeah, you should be able to see the ring of the Saturn and stuff.
Yeah.
But I have no clue what the heck I'm doing. I need some definite help. But like I said, it's just the experience with my daughter and my kids and stuff. They think it's just amazing. And so the $10 was definitely worth it just for that. But
yeah, I will agree with you. To be honest, I have never bought a new telescope. I always buy them through places like, Goodwill, although, you know, it's best to know a little bit of what you're doing, which, hey, I wrote a book about that, about how to know what is good or not so good in a telescope. But, yeah, good deals can be found. There's a place called a website that I go to every single day called cloudynights.com, and they have a classified section where people buy and sell telescope equipment that I've had very, very good luck with as well. But as far as helping you find Saturn, I think I need to be out there with you, because explaining that on a radio show would be very difficult. Again, though, if it's a guided telescope that will automatically point to things, the first thing you have to do with those always is line them up so that they know where to go, and that usually requires manually pointing the telescope at a few stars so that the computer inside can figure things out. It's not exactly an easy thing to do for someone who's never done it before.
Yeah. And right now, Saturn in the night sky is, you mentioned where it was. It's kind of low, isn't it?
It is kind of low, but it's still plenty high to see, especially right after it gets dark. And it's between Jupiter and Venus, which are both very bright. If you look between them, it's not quite in line with them. It's a little above the line between those two planets. But it's yellow, and it's there. And if you can manually aim your telescope at it, you will be able to see the rings. If you can magnify, 45 or 50 times. You know, binoculars typically, they're about 10 power, and they won't be able to bring it in close enough.
Yeah. There you go. And if you have an app on your phone, Stargate.
Yes, that's true. Again, I do not have a smartphone. Yeah, that's how technical I am. But there are many, many apps, and Larry, you know more about them than I do, where you get them on your phone. Some are even free, but none of them are very high priced. And you basically aim your phone at the sky, and it tells you what you're looking at.
Yeah, I've got Star Tracker.
Mm-hmm.
And that was free. It was a free app, and it is amazing. As you point it in the sky, and it tells you what you're looking at.
Right. Yeah.
So that's something you might consider, Nick, if you've got a smartphone. But otherwise, Paul gave you some good advice for kind of looking to see if you can find it. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it, Bill in Barnes, Wisconsin. Hi, Bill.
Good morning. You pretty much just answered my question. It was what apps might you recommend for a smartphone for looking at stars? I have something called Night Sky, and I don't like it very much. It insists on playing this choral music every time you pick it up. I got my own imagination, but what might you suggest?
Well, again, I don't do apps, but I know I've searched for them before when people have asked questions. If you just go online and do a search for astronomy apps, there are so many, not just like the ones we're talking about that show you what's up in the night sky, but others that go into more detail, others that, will talk to you about not just what you can see, but what is a star and things like that. There's many, many different choices you can make. And as far as the apps for showing you the night sky, they'll start out with a very basic version for free or very low cost, and you can get more and more and more detail. And lots of people now, there are apps that you can actually use for your computer guided telescopes. You can just hook your phone up through Bluetooth or whatever and use the app to actually aim your telescope.
Yeah.
There's very basic beginnings and very complex endings. You could get lost.
And the Star Tracker that I have, I just clicked it on right now, and I'm looking at where the moon should be in the sky.
Something? You're in an office, and there's the moon right out there. Yeah.
And Bill, it has a a thing that you can click to. If you want the music, it'll play it. If you don't want it, it won't play it.
Yeah.
So that I have it not playing it. So I'm kind of with you on that one, Bill.
And the thing is, they're so inexpensive, and I'm somebody who does not have a lot of money, so I don't usually say this, but they're so expensive. If you choose one that you don't like, you know, there are so many others that you can choose from.
Yeah, and Star Tracker's free. It does come with some ads, but for 99 cents, you can have it without the ads for a buck.
Yeah, there you go.
So there you go. Thank you, Bill.
And that's, you know, that right there could be a gift. You know,
you could, if
for someone who maybe wants to get into the night sky but knows nothing and doesn't know where to start, do some exploration on those kind of things, because it's fun and you can do it in the middle of the day, you know, whenever. You can use it to aim it at the sky and, hey, what's above the corner of my office right now? It's daytime. You won't be able to see it. You're in an office, but it's still fun.
It is. Lori in Shawano, your turn. Hi, Lori.
Hello. Actually, I have two questions now because I just thought of one. There was supposed to be an eclipse on Friday, a lunar eclipse. I was just wondering if we were able to see that here. It was cloudy here, and I knew we wouldn't be able to see it, but in this part of the hemisphere, I was wondering. But the other question was, I've seen in catalogs these binoculars that you can take photos with, and I was just wondering if you've ever used any of those, and if those would take good photos?
On your first question, a little short story, our furnace went out, and on that evening, I was driving to Indiana, the closest place I could find a new furnace, and it was in the very middle of the night, and I looked out the window at about... it had been cloudy, and I had forgotten about the eclipse because it was cloudy. And then I noticed, hey, the sky's clear. I looked out my car's window, and oh, yeah, there it is. Much of the moon was covered in Earth's shadow, so it was very lovely. And I'll just mention that one's passed. But on May 16th, which happens to be my wedding anniversary, there's going to be another, this time a total. That wasn't quite total. This one will be a total lunar eclipse at a much better time, starting at about 9:30, the Earth's shadow will start covering it, and totality, where it's completely in the Earth's shadow, starts at 10:30 p.m., peaks at 11:11, and then totality ends at 11:53, so a really beautiful evening one.
And what's the day on that one?
Pardon?
What's the date on that?
May 16th of next year. And lunar eclipses are so amazing, kind of like comets. You can't really predict them. Sometimes the Earth or the moon is quite dark, and then other times it's not so dark. And that's hard to predict, and yet no matter what, it's just gorgeous. They call them blood moons, not something I really like. It's not even the color of blood, come on. But it's beautiful. So that's something coming up.
And then with the
binoculars with the... cameras, I haven't actually seen one of those in a few years, but I will say, unless they've really updated them, the camera that's in them, it does not take very high-resolution pictures, and it won't take pictures of things that are very dark. The moon, yeah, that would work, but you can actually take pictures of the moon with your smartphone if you can get it up to the end of just regular binoculars. You can just put your phone up to it. It takes some skill and some practice, but you can take a picture, you can take 20 or 30 and choose the one that's best. I've had people do that, and I think that works really well.
I've had experience with the binocular photography thing, and one of the problems, too, is just holding them still enough
right
to get a good shot. And you're right, the quality of the photos, at least, and this was a long time back.
Right.
You know, they may be much better now. But you're also right about your smartphone. Just
right. And the thing about, you know, now you have me thinking about it, most binoculars, right between the two lenses, they have a little thing where you can actually attach them to a tripod with an adapter. So then you can aim them and they won't shake. But I imagine... that's where the camera is on these binoculars, so I bet you aren't able to put it on a tripod. So, yeah, that would make it much more difficult.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that question, Laurie. Appreciate it. Jeff from the town of Springdale sent an email and wants to know what impact the low-orbit satellites like Starlink have on our future ability to see all the cool stuff in the sky.
Yeah.
Also, who in the world regulates what can be launched into orbit?
That's a tough question. I'm not an expert on it, but it seems that no one does, and that there's several companies now, Elon Musk and SpaceX. They're the big one that we hear about, but there are other companies too, whose intention is to launch thousands upon thousands of low Earth orbiting satellites. And they do interfere with the view, and especially professional astronomers, some are really not happy about it. It's going to interfere. And the cause might be noble. They want to give internet service and phone service to people no matter where they are. My own feeling is that it's solving a problem and creating another one. And yeah, there are some people who think, ooh, isn't that neat? And my own opinion is no, it isn't really. It's just more junk. So that's my opinion. There are people who think it's a fine idea. And I will say Musk is working with astronomers to try and minimize what's going on, but it will definitely be a problem.
We had a listener email, and they didn't catch the name of that $250 telescope you were recommending. And could you repeat the information on that?
Astronomy Without Borders, One Sky. And One Sky is kind of one word, capital O-N-E, capital S-K-Y, as one word. If you type that in a search, I think it would come up. But A-W-B, One Sky. And it takes you right to the very first search item will take you right to it.
And just $250.
And I recommend it because, again, I've looked through a couple of different samples. Our club owns one and one of our members owns one, and both of them, it's a reflector, so it uses mirrors. And the quality of the mirrors in both of these and from the things I've read online are quite high. It's a mirror that's 130 millimeters in diameter, and that if that means nothing to you, that's okay. But that's quite large for a beginning scope. And the larger the lens or mirror is on your telescope, the more it will allow you to see. So that's a very good point. It's built well, comes with two eyepieces. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good bet.
Well, Astronomy Without Borders is going to suddenly find that they've sold a whole bunch more.
Yeah, and it's showing, you know, you can buy them right now. And I know that's another thing about buying gifts right now. So many of them, you know, they're not available. And it may well be that if you try and order one, they'll say, well, you may not get it till after Christmas with the way things are with supply lines and all that. I'm not sure about that. And I'm not going to buy one to try and find out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Roger in Grantsburg, what's on your mind?
I had a question for him. I've been a night observer for years and years. I'm a farmer. And you live in Minneapolis. I'm just north of Minneapolis, about 80 miles. But I observed something this summer that was a strange phenomenon. I was wondering if you have ran into any strange phenomena. It was a beam of light going through the sky from like southwest to northeast, kind of on an angle, and it looked like, if you had like the headlights on your car, how it puts a beam of light ahead of you, like a wide beam.
Mm-hmm.
It was a wide beam of light going through the sky. There was nothing behind it. And it was wide. It was huge. Normal satellites are small dots. This thing was super wide, and it was wasn't going real fast. There was no plane, nothing behind it. Freaked me right out.
So are you saying it was a beam, or was it a dot in the sky?
Like a wide beam of light.
Huh.
It wasn't a dot like a satellite, you know how they are.
Yeah.
It was a wide, wide beam, like your car would put ahead of you when you're driving.
Sure. Well, the only thing I could think of, it, you know, a spotlight or something like that. But no, I don't know what that is. Searchlights can be amazingly bright. And I know sometimes like car dealerships will shine them up in the sky, but typically they use more than one and it moves all over to draw attention. But boy, I don't know. I have no idea.
No idea either. Well, maybe somebody else does. We'll find. The La Crosse Planetarium, by the way, opened again to the public after more than a year off. Is that right?
That's right. They do programs. You can also book them if you have groups and things like that. And I like to plug that one because I know the director. He's a member of our club. In fact, he helped start it. And my son, who's a student at UWL, works at the planetarium right now. So they do weekly programs, and they will have groups. And they typically, around Christmas time, do a special Christmas program. And it's just nice that it's back after time off because of COVID.
You know, you've used an inflatable planetarium in the past. Is that, you still doing any of that, Paul?
Well, I've had two summers off. I am scheduled to go to a school in January, but with the pandemic, going inside a small enclosed space, maybe things will get better now that younger kids can get vaccinated, but it's usually school groups I do it with. And, you know, for safety reasons, I just don't.
Yeah.
I'm not really pushing it. I would go to schools if we could find safe ways to do it. And, but I do that. It's one of my favorite things to do. There's nothing like a planetarium to show people how it is that the sky changes and what's up there. It's just wonderful. And I don't know anyone who goes into a planetarium and doesn't walk out with just in awe.
Exactly. And your book, Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy.
Yeah, that's available anywhere books are sold. And I wrote it because when I would be at star events, people would ask questions. And I thought, you know, I should write like a short frequently asked questions flyer to hand people. And I started it, and then it was 100 and some pages long. And Cambridge University Press said, yeah, we'll publish that. So it helps people choose binoculars, telescopes, and other ways to look at the sky. And then the second half of the book is a very basic guide to what's up there and how to find it.
It's a great book, Paul, and I always appreciate you taking the time to be with us and talking about the sky, and that book is a wonderful book.
Well, thanks.
And thank you so much for being with us. We'll look forward to your next visit.
All right.
Thank you, Paul. Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy, a member of the La Crosse Astronomy Club. It's always great to have him come by. Tomorrow on the show, I won't be here. I'll be eating turkey or something. But I tell you what, we have our annual Turkey Confidential program, and sometimes that is absolutely hilarious. It's always fun, and I'll probably have it on myself to listen because I always enjoy that show. So Turkey Confidential tomorrow at 11. But you know what? There is lots more in store here on the Ideas Network right through the afternoon and evening, and I hope you'll stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network, and happy Thanksgiving.